Tech is a bi-weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Welcome back to Wells Tech, everybody. This is episode 722, recorded on April 15th, 2024. Show about technology and ministry, not about taxes, although maybe we talk about taxes once in a while, not too often. But helping me talk about technology and ministry, as usual, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally, taxes in, I'm assuming.
Taxes are done. It's a happy day at the Drapers. And it's also a happy day because my dad, who spent his lifetime being an accountant, had a tax birthday. Actually, he was cool before there was a tax day. He claimed April 15th first. So,
So he was a tax accountant and his birthday is April 15th. Is that what you're saying?
Oh my gosh. So that was kind of funny.
It was preordained.
I suppose. So happy tax day.
Yeah, I do not wait till the last day anymore. I mean, I did that once in a while and usually it didn't go well.
A little bit of stress.
I know. I'm the president of our congregation now, and I know exactly who the last minute filers are because they've lost their W-2s and they need intervention. So,
wow.
I don't need that kind of stress. But anyway, and that today's tax software, or if you use a tax professional, I guess that's another way to do it. But I've never done that. I've always used tax software, or not always, as long as it's been available. And that's gotten so much better. It's so much easier to do it that way.
So. Yeah, I'm not the tax person. I'm the record keeper, and I provide all the reports that we need. But my tax person, Kevin, he likes the software, and he coaches our children as well. So we kind of gotten to the point where the kids are
Pass it down to the next generation.
Not asking as many questions anymore. But it's cool because you can buy a license that allows them to use your copy of the software as well. So we kind of do a family share.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, that's cool. Yeah. You've got one son in the ministry, so that's a unique tax situation too.
Yeah,
so.
But he's done it a couple of years and feeling more confident, and he also uses the software. He doesn't rely on a professional to do it, but relies on his dad to know the software really well. So.
Right. Works. So. Well, for all of you, by the time we publish this, you should have submitted your taxes or an extension.
That's right.
But so that's all behind you. All right, Sally, on this podcast, we're going to actually not look back, but forward. I think we've talked about this off and on and in different ways, but I thought it would be good as we're approaching summer when a lot of people kind of consider or reconsider the technology in their lives or their schools or their churches, and try and make decisions about what stays, what goes, what needs to be considered. So I thought maybe a show about future-proofing your tech, or at least trying to make the smartest decision you can with the information available today about some of these technology choices. And in almost every area of knowledge work or productivity or data management, there is a decision to make. And you're constantly trying to evaluate, reevaluate, try and fill gaps, those kinds of things. And so just a high level, I thought, you know, we won't get into real specifics here, but just kind of a high level talk about some things to consider when you're making some of these pretty important decisions.
Yep. And I'm thinking of a story as you're introducing this topic, Martin. There's a quote here in our notes that say, tech people come and go, but the tech remains. And I can remember back in the day being in a congregation that had used the Microsoft suite. And we came there and we ended up kind of switching over to the Google suite. And there were these remnants, you know, like we were constantly kind of battling between the two systems. And being able to edit the documents we wanted to edit the right way and things like that, converting them, things like that. So I think many of us can relate to that, where we've had a foot in two different worlds or whatever. And obviously, you know, sometimes those worlds come crashing down. Like, they may not have the longevity that we hope for. We're talking Microsoft and Google. They've been around and we feel like they're going to last for a while. But when we're talking more specific tech solutions, maybe your church management software or something you use for curriculum mapping or something like that on the education side, you really have to be careful as you make those decisions.
So you and I, Sally, in our pre-show prep, put together quite a lengthy list of items that, you know, you might want to consider. As you look at our list, I'm going to put you on the spot. What would be number one? You know, if you don't do anything else when you're considering this decision, what must you do? What's at the top of the list, or your list?
That's a hard one, Martin. It is a good list, and there's a lot of number ones there, it seems. I guess knowing your people and their needs is probably the number one thing. So, you know, you may be a super techie person, but you know that the complexity of certain software solutions is just going to frustrate your staff or whatever. So you have to gear the solutions to the people that are going to be hands-on with the software.
Yeah,
I think that's probably number one.
I think that's up there for me too, at least in the top three. I think the challenge for people like us, when I say people like us and maybe our listeners, is we kind of get technology. We've had our feet wet enough with a lot of different technologies that we kind of get it. It doesn't take us long to get up to speed. And it's very difficult to empathize with somebody who's not that way, who is technology is sometimes a chore or a necessary evil or something that they don't enjoy considering, don't enjoy learning, don't enjoy teaching or reading documentation or some of the things that you and I, you know, kind of take for granted. It's very difficult to sometimes get in their shoes and say, this is going to be tough for them.
Yep. And I think you kind of hit on something important and maybe something that's a telltale sign of good technology. And that's the amount of support, the amount of resources that are out there and things like that. So kind of skipping to the end of the story where we're going to eventually need help with this or have to train someone new on it. Looking at technologies that have those layers baked in means it's been around for a while. There's people using it. There's questions that have been asked and solutions that have been offered. And that's pretty powerful as you begin to think about supporting people in your ministry setting.
Yeah. In fact, I would recommend some softwares that maybe aren't exactly the right fit, but they have a better support, have better support documentation, training behind them, because the chances of success are going to go up regardless of the fact that it only meets maybe 70% of your requirements. But that number one requirement of good support and the ability to provide help to the person trying to figure this out, that's huge.
It is. And when there's multiple people trying to figure it out and you're constantly bogged down by support and making your own training videos or whatever it may be, you begin to appreciate the fact that they have good systems in place for that kind of thing.
Yep. And this somewhat suggests the next one that I would think is important is its simplicity. Does it over-engineer? Does it try to be too much? Does it try to answer too many questions, or is it just kind of straightforward? And even the most uninitiated would at least be able to get going pretty quickly. We're going to talk about one tool in particular. I said we weren't going to do any deep dives, but I think one tool, at least in both of our minds, kind of fits a lot of these criteria. And I think to look for the tool, if you're considering, you know, three or four different tools and one of them has all the bells and whistles and has 10 different, top level menu items and many sub menus and can slice and dice everything. And then one that does half of that, but is very approachable is easy to understand and is not going to confuse somebody. That simplicity value is super high in my book.
And I have a surefire indicator. Not okay. Surefire. Large fonts on the website. Like if there's a lot of white space and a lot of big text, people are going to love it because yeah. It feels simple. So
yep.
Little tip of the hat there.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that would suggest also that a tool that is constantly adding new features or maybe changing the interface or, you know, moving things around, that's something to avoid too. I think a lot of companies try and do that so they can justify maybe an upgrade cost or a premium feature that they're hoping people will pay for. But sometimes that gets in the way and just is a confusing thing. Now, there's a cost with simplicity too. That may mean you as a technology person may need to create more templates or more guidance or some structure, some policies and procedures, that kind of stuff, because the software doesn't impose that. You have to, but that's not all bad either as you're trying to figure out how this best fits your church or your school or your organization.
So there's an elephant in the room, I believe. The thing that you may have expected Martin and I to say is the number one thing. And I don't know if you know what I'm going to say, but the elephant to me is cost.
Cost, yep.
You know, if you're going shopping for something, you want that low price or free or whatever. And sometimes it works out really well that technology is at the low price or free, but not always. And I would say that's not a super high consideration. I mean, obviously, if the price is astronomical, you're not going to be able to afford it. But sometimes it's worth what you pay for those things to get the simplicity and the support and the, you know, comfort feeling for your people that are going to be using it.
Yeah. And I would say one way to use a big word, obviate the concern for cost is a lot of these tools come with a monthly subscription that you can get out of if you want. And a good way to kick the tires on something is, yeah, go ahead and pay for the level that you think you need. Try it out, but try it out with the understanding that, hey, this is a trial. That don't go all in and spend hours and hours and hours moving in until you're rock solid on the decision that this cost is worth, you know, what you're getting out of it. So I think the concern there with cost, again, you know, shouldn't all be driven because you may wind up paying for something in the end anyway, whether that be in man or woman hours or some other way, you know, whether you got to move out of a system or because it didn't meet your needs, I think that would be a consideration.
Yeah.
Sally, maybe the one other item that I'd throw in here is longevity. Is how many years do you think this is going to meet your needs, or do you think it's going to be even around? You mentioned kind of sticking with the big boys, you know, Google and Microsoft. Those don't always come free, unfortunately. Although Google does a pretty good job, and I think Microsoft has some good free tools too. But if you start getting into some, you know, the flavor of the day kinds of selections, those things that are cool and are being talked about, and you know, they come up in conversations, and you say, "Hey, this looks really cool. We should try this." Longevity should be a consideration in that decision making process because so a lot of things come and go. There's the junkyard of cool softwares and solutions
shiny.
And subscriptions is pretty big. So you want to kind of give it a little bit of breathing room so you can kind of see how well it's going to be supported and is it going to stay as a free tool or if it is going to move into the land of the subscription, what's that going to look like? So I would say concern for longevity would be up there on the list too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lost my train of thought, but I'm just going to say one that's important to me is how portable things that you create are so mm-hmm. that if it's just locked up in the cloud in their site, you're saving to their site, you can only access things through their site, that might not give you as much comfort level as if you can sync things locally or save to your, you know, your shared drive or whatever it may be. So actually having your hands on files ends up being a pretty important thing when, you know, the vendor goes out of business or something and takes all your brain work with them. I'd also say on the education side, just a flood of things to consider. Maybe church offices are calm places in terms of technology. They do documents and calendars and things, but man, on the education side, you've got to be really careful as you look at longevity and how easy it is to use and all those other considerations.
Yep, for sure. I think the question would be asked, and rightly so, how do you know how to make some of these decisions on the front end of all this before you get too deep? Yeah, not everybody has a crystal ball. In fact, nobody does.
Yeah.
How do you figure that stuff out? And I guess in my experience, and this came up in the master's class that I was teaching for MLC last year. In fact, this was one of my questions to the students. How do you do this? Is there a process? Is there a best practice? And at the end of the day, we didn't really come to a, the students really didn't come to a kind of a black and white solution other than to say there's really no substitute for experience. You kind of have to have been around the block to know what to look for, what not to look for, what are the qualifiers and disqualifiers, how to systematically do a software evaluation. And that kind of speaks to, especially in faculties where teachers are being exposed to different solutions for classroom technology or productivity or whatever. And they're grabbing onto these things. And I think it's always helpful to maybe set up a an environment where those teachers who may not have this experience in tool selection, maybe tapping on the shoulder those who do and kind of collaboratively asking the right questions about, you know, is this a fit? And if it is a fit, you know, maybe how does this play out in other classrooms or for other teachers? So every classroom having a different set of tools is not necessarily the best solution for everybody. So kind of getting that big picture question addressed as well is, I think, is important.
Reminds me of a meeting I was once attending, actually recently attending. We just had a tech team meeting where we did exactly this. We all kind of sat down and looked at the tools we were using. We divided it up among teams, and each team had a subset of all the different tools we were using. And then we came together as a group and said, well, is that the best use of it? Is it the right tool for that purpose? You know, how do we get others engaged in it? If we think it's the bee's knees, you know, how do we engage others to use it as well? So a good exercise to go through. And maybe that's one of your faculty training days or something where you actually just periodically, maybe not every year, but take a look at what you're doing in it. And maybe you realize, oh, wow, you're doing some really cool stuff with it I never thought of using it for or whatever. So I think that's some of the realizations we came to as a tech team, that there were there were things we could take advantage of, and there were things that weren't working so well for us that other people had better solutions for. So
sure. So let's talk about a couple of tools. We're not going to get into an extended tools discussion, but some things that seem to be good starting points that meet a bunch of needs and kind of qualify as the you know, maybe a good fit for a number of different use cases. And one that comes to my mind, Sally, I think is Trello. We've talked about Trello a lot on this show, and Trello just seems to meet, especially on the productivity side, a number of things in that project management, task management, communication, organization. Those buckets tend to be Trello's sweet spot. It can be a free tool, although there's a fairly modest upgrade price if you want to get some more premium features. It has a ton of add-ons. One of the things that I think is a selling point for it is it's approachable for people who aren't technology savvy. It's a simple card-based, list-based, board-based paradigm. And I think that's pretty easy for people to get their arms around and understand, oh, this is a card and I can put information on the card and I can open the card and see the back of the card and I can put comments on it, et cetera, just like I can on a regular note card. And my cards go in a little box or a list, and the list is in this one big board, and away you go. And there's not a lot of structure. It doesn't need to be a lot of structure. You can create templates and that kind of stuff. So you have the ability for somebody who's more accomplished to kind of give it some structure. But at the end of the day, you can jump in there. And I think it wouldn't be that hard for somebody to get started. What do you think?
Yeah, I definitely agree. I'd call it kind of a Swiss Army knife type tool.
Mm-hmm.
If we pulled, you know, random Trello users from across the world, we would find that people are using it very differently in different settings. And that's a big, powerful thing to look for as you're looking for these tools, because it can fit your needs in unique ways, and you can kind of structure it or not, you know, keep it as unstructured as you want. And I think that's the sign of a good tool, something that's a Swiss Army knife. Another Swiss Army knife for me is Google Sheets, which seems like a really odd tool to call on. But Google Sheets is basically a blank palette. It's the ability to create whatever you want. You can size them however you want. You can export them as images, so it can be an image tool. You can put in text and videos and audio and all these different components. And when I need to design something, I oftentimes just go to that blank palette. It has all the capabilities. It's my Swiss Army knife again.
Are you talking about Google Sheets or Google
Slides? Slides
Google
is the
Slides.
Word I meant to use. I'm
okay.
Sorry. Sheets is the spreadsheet. Wow.
Yep.
You're right.
No, I would agree, Google Slides. And I think one of our classroom technology correspondents would agree with you there, because I think
that's right.
Rachel Feld is a big Google Slides person. Lots of
I
different
bet she
uses
says
it
right too.
No, I totally agree. It does give you that blank palette, and it is kind of that many different uses kind of tool, and very easy to get into and approachable too. So very good. If you've got ideas for this topic on how you approach, you know, technology selection, let us know. Send us an email at wellstech@wells.net, or go to our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net, and leave a comment there. I think there's lots of different approaches and ways to do this. I think we just took it at a high level, but I think there's some very real life scenarios that people could share that would be useful for people to pick up on and put in their ministry planning. All right, Sally, should we move along to ministry resources?
We should. And I'm going to do a quick screen share for those watching video. Today, we want to make mention of an upcoming webinar hosted by our friends at Wells Women's Ministry. This one, I think, has a very global reach, though, not even just for women, but the women have organized this and you can sit in on it. It's titled Miss Understanding Mental Health. So hopefully we come away with things we're misunderstanding, but a better understanding of mental health. So as a Christian look at today's epidemic, and I'd agree, there's definitely epidemic levels of mental health challenges out there in the world today. So it has scriptural background. They've listed different reasons why we obviously care for those who have burdens of this magnitude or whatever. And so they want to just bring awareness, focus on mental health, kind of a unique perspective from the Christian perspective, obviously, in this world. And so they've brought in some counselors from Christian Family Solutions. They're going to look for and share healthy ways, God-pleasing ways to balance our lives and responsibilities and that kind of thing. So this might be a good one for you to gather a group or watch with a friend. Our recent interviewee, Rachel Halderson, is going to be moderating the discussion, and it's going to include two licensed professional counselors from Christian Family Services, Julie Stratsky and Karen Fisher. So I am guessing it will be an excellent webinar to sit in on. And you just need to hop over to the page that we share in the show notes on the Wells website to get registered for the webinar. And they'll send you a reminder. It is happening Thursday, May 2nd at 7 p.m., scheduled for 1 hour.
Very nice. Good, good. Yeah, we interviewed
Rachel
from Women's Ministry about the whole webinar series. And this is just a great success story. They're getting more and more ladies to join these, and the topics are just awesome. So good job. All right, let's move on to our picks of the week. Sally, what do you got this week?
I have an Amazon link to share, and it will link you to a company called Cocoon. And they're gridded organizers. So these are organizers that allow you to easily capture and control all the minutiae that ends up in your travel bags and things. And for me, specifically, all the wires and things that I end up carrying. And I just want to say the reason this came to mind is because of longevity, because I have one of these gridded organizers and I have had it for quite some time. Martin might remember, because I think it was something that he gifted me even. And I get excited when I pack, because my gridded organizer handles all those loose wires for me, and it's definitely stood the test of time. So the Cocoon company has a variety of sizes, and pricing is just really affordable. I have probably, I think this may be 10 by 7 size, and it's $18.50. Some of the other sizes in black, mine's blue. So if you want other colors besides black, you have to pay a premium. But some of the others are $12 to $14. So very well priced. And like I said, definitely has stood the test of time. So I thought it fit with this show discussion.
Yeah, I don't know if we talked about this on a previous, long ago. I mean, these have been around forever, but they haven't changed a lot, which means that they seem to resonate and do well for their purpose. So the grid, I find super useful, because they don't just have, elastic in one direction, but it goes horizontal, vertical, different lengths, different sizes. And super easy to kind of customize to all your stuff. And they don't add a lot of girth to your nope. backpack or whatever it is that you're putting in, but you can put in almost anything in there and holds it
That's
right
true.
in place.
I always put my mouse there and different plugs and things that you can plug your USB devices into. And even my big honker, power cord for my laptop.
Yep.
It all fits on there, and I just keep cramming things under the little grid and making it work, and it's pretty cool.
Yep.
And so they're right there when you get off the plane or get out of your car and unpack. Nothing moves. Yep. Really well done.
So if you've got a rat's nest of tech gadgets in the bottom of your purse or backpack, this is for you. So
for sure.
All right, my pick of the week is simply a tool set from Google. Speaking of Google, to allow the scanning of documents into Google Drive. And we'll put a link to the show notes in just a kind of a help article for iOS or Android users. There's also a way to do this on your computer as well. But the ability to get digitized those things that you want in an electronic format and pitch the paper. So this is great for somebody who wants to just digitally store receipts. That's what I primarily use it for, invoices or important documents or manuals, that kind of thing. So there's something that you need to take a picture of that's only in paper format. This process works pretty well. So I store all those in Google Drive. And lately, I don't know how long this has been a feature, but there's a scan a document feature. So it recognizes that you're looking at a document with usually text on it. And it not only grabs it, but it can straighten it. You can adjust the contrast on it to give it a little bit more clarity. It allows you to erase things, crop things, retake the photo if you didn't quite get the lighting right. And then it does a really cool thing that it tries to name it for you. So it'll actually pick up from the document a proposed name. So, for instance, I was scanning in my glasses prescription. I went to the eye doctor a week or so ago. They give you your glasses prescription on a piece of paper. So I took a picture of that, and it correctly named, glasses prescription, and then the date and my name for the document, which is exactly the way I would have named it myself. So saves a step. So Google is applying some smarts to that, and then you just simply put it in the folder that you want, and Google makes that pretty easy too. But kind of a nice feature. I know Apple Notes does something similar to this as well, and maybe other tools. But up until this point, or up until recently, I'd been using things like, there's an Adobe scanner or PDF scanner or Scanner Pro or things like that, that you separate apps that you can use on your phone. This just kind of eliminates the need to have a separate app on the front end to do this, as you want to get it in Google Drive at the end of the day anyway. So why not just start there? So I found this to be a cool tool for anybody that wants to use their phone to digitize their life. So take a look at the show notes for the, it's a simple help text for those using iOS and Android to get that done.
About that, Google has good help and support and training. Probably be a good tool to share with other people.
Sure. Yeah, good decisions there sometimes.
There
All
you
right,
go.
Sally, let's move on to community news and feedback.
Couple of things to share here, Martin. I wanted to start with an article I came across through Kim Komando. I think recently, maybe it was Pastor Peter Hagen who suggested Kim Komando's newsletter would be a good thing to subscribe to just to stay up on technology type topics. And recently she shared an article called Before You Die, Decide Who Gets Access to Your Online Accounts and Digital Files. So we're talking about longevity of tools, but eventually heaven calls and what happens to your Facebook account or your files on in the cloud on Google or whatever. And Kim kind of walks you through different tools and, kind of creating a checklist and things you might be concerned about and ways to set up your memorialization, whatever it may be, on these different tools. I think she's got Twitter and Instagram covered. She talks about your phone, your bank and financial details, all kinds of things. So definitely, give this a quick scan. It's not a deep article, but at least it may get you thinking as to longevity and someday, what you leave behind digitally and making decisions about that now while you're still in control. So check it out.
Nice peace of mind there, I think, if nothing
I
else.
agree. All right. I did a little browsing on the Wells Intersections group. This is a Facebook group. It's a private group now, so you have to request to join, and then you can get access to everything. You can search and find historical posts and things like that. So, lots of great knowledge shared out there, especially related to ministry and technology. Recently, I had some discussion about gathering contact information. I'm not sure how your church does it, Martin, but in our church, we have a little sheet of paper that's in the bulletin each week, and people turn it in the offering. And there's also a QR code. So if they want to fill out their contact information online, they can, whatever they choose to do. A basket in the back, if they don't get it done in time for the offering, we really want your contact information. And our pastors make a good effort to announce that each week and encourage people to do it. This question was around Easter time and getting guests, specifically to share their contact information. And, you can say, please fill it out and et cetera. But the question was basically posed, do you offer them incentive, give them something that appeals, like a book on parenting or a link to a YouTube video on improving their marriage or free tickets to the zoo, whatever it may be. Do you go that route? And one of the responders, Kelly, said this year on Easter, we said we would be donating X amount per connection card to a local nonprofit. People loved it, and we got a good response of the connection cards that we got turned in. Thought that was a pretty cool idea. But then there was some discussion around, is this too gimmicky or trick, is it overdone? Because lots of websites you go to say free gift if you sign up for our e-newsletter or whatever. And basically, the people that replied didn't feel like it was too gimmicky. They thought it was reasonable to ask people and to give them a little premium if they did fill something out for you or whatever. So I don't know if you have strong opinions or experience on that one, Martin.
I don't, but I think these thoughts are good to kind of think through. And there's always, I think, opportunities to increase that communication. So good stuff here.
Yeah. And then just one more topic I came across that I found interesting was a link to an article. We'll include the link in our show notes about good cameras for broadcasting church services. So basically a link to streaming, web services and the type of equipment you'd need. And our resident guru is Philip Wells on this topic, and he actually weighed in a little and agreed. They were pointing to PTZ Optics, which is something Phil's been on the show and talked about in the past. A great brand, offer lots of features and things, and I just kind of summarized here, but he mentioned specific cameras that he thought were good deals and things like that. And then even some alternative cameras, Avcans and Fomaco are two brands he's found on Amazon that work very similar to PTZ Optics for around 50% of the price. So, and then he had a little caution that he included, don't forget audio. You want to get that from the PA system, but you could use an ambient mic to pick up the congregation as well. So there's some work around getting this just right. But I think these are some good pointers, and the article that we linked to is a good pointer as well. If you're looking for Phil's full feedback and write-up and stuff, which is kind of lengthy, but very, very good information, you can check it out in the Wells Intersections group, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, always appreciate Philip's comments there. He's got some nice experience.
For sure. And then I'm just going to tack on one more because I actually have a brand new hardware item in my collection. Unexpected, but I think worth a mention for our Wells Tech audience. I struggle with having drinking water up here in the area where my office is, and the fact that I'm slow now that I've recovered from some medical challenges. It means porting drinking water from down in the kitchen where there's reverse osmosis up here to my office, and that can take a while. And recently somebody said, well, you should just get a drinking station, where they have the big 5 gallon water bottles and things. And it made me look on Amazon, and I ended up with this tool that's a pump, basically. So you buy the 5 gallon bottles, it has a tube, and it drops down in your 5 gallon bottle or your 4 gallon bottle or whatever it is, and it pumps the water out for you very efficiently. Now, many of these that are out there, are like a mechanical pump where you push a button a certain number of times or whatever it may be. This one is actually powered via a USB cable, so I can charge it up and pump my water for quite a while, and then, recharge it when it runs down. And I am like the happiest girl with this water at my disposal right here. The reason I thought it was worth sharing was because we were recently visiting our children, and the water, the tap water is not super drinkable in their church and parsonage. And so they use filtering and things like that. And she said, actually, one of the members brings reverse osmosis water from her refrigerator, maker or whatever. And it's kind of a hassle to bring this water in to church for drinking water. And so I think this would be a great solution if you've got some drinking water challenges and you don't want to spend $150 on a dispenser. You just plop one of these and put a $16 tap on top of it, basically, to pump it out. And it works amazing. You can take it to events, so totally portable and clean and closed system. And I'm super thrilled with it. So thought it was worth sharing on Wells Tech.
Cool. Do you have you had it long enough to know how long the charge will last?
I haven't run it out. I've only had it for a couple of weeks, and I did recharge it when it looked gave me a glimmer that it might be getting okay. just a tiny bit low. So it so lasts a long a time.
Week, something like that.
Yeah.
That's
like
pretty
that.
Cool. Yeah. It is. And then you don't have to have the floor space and the big, ugly, you know,
dispenser
water cooler sitting in your home. That's awesome. Yeah. So
it'd be good for parties. You could set it on a tabletop. Mine's actually sitting on the floor right by where I sit at my desk, so I can refill at will.
Cool. And I suppose the cheaper price is because it really doesn't have to filter it. It just needs to pump it because the water is already purified.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Cool. Like it.
Very happy with it.
All right. Thanks, Sally. I think that's going to about do it this week for our tax day broadcast. We are going to do this all over again in a couple weeks. And I think we're going to talk about time blocking. We teased this, I think, a while back and just didn't do it for whatever reason. And I think now is the time to begin to look at this piece of the productivity puzzle where we are trying to figure out what place does your calendar have in your productivity system and how useful is it to use it to kind of set aside times for specific tasks. Lots of ways to do this, lots of controversy about is this a good thing or not. So we are going to talk about that next time. So
maybe we should remind people about our resources online. And I'm doing that with a camera overlay. Just thought I'd try this happiness
here. Look at
here.
That. I like
How
it.
How about that? It's magic. wellstech.wells.net is our website where you can find this episode and 721 previous episodes archived there with all kinds of tech and ministry goodness for you. There's also links across the top to all different social networks, so you can connect with us there and send us your comments. You can even send us a voicemail right here from the website. And of course, we take good old-fashioned email. Our email address is wellstech@wells.net.
Excellent. All right. As I said, that's going to about do it for this week's show, episode 722. Please tune in for 723. Tell your friends, family, etc. Love to have more people joining and taking advantage of the good stuff that we bring each and every time we do the show. Thanks so much for joining us. We will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.